So this is the beginning. On a spring day in the northern Cascade Mountains of Washington State, we listen in to a particularly old Douglas fir. I stand on the side of mountain in forest full of my kin. My very top branches feel the warmth of sun and almost touch the clouds. I can feel a pair of spotted owls creating their nest inside of one of my hollow places. Red vole is nesting up in my high branches, feasting on my needles. This is the time when the young ones come. We old, tall needle ones have seen many, many winters. As far as I can see, are my kin. Once in a while, we see two-leggeds. They come and sing to us, asking if they might take some of our needles and bark and resin for medicines to do some healing. We listen, and if we can feel their heart in their song, we say yes. They are always grateful. Back in a city neighborhood of Massachusetts, we listen in on another conversation. Homeowner, I want a little deck in the back of my second floor kitchen. Can you widen the narrow walkway to a deck? Contractor, we can do anything you want as long as we can engineer the support safely and get city approved. Homeowner, what wood do you recommend? Contractor, fir. Fir is what you want. It's good and soft and yet tough. It's a nice red color. It'll last well. Homeowner, I'd like to go barefoot on the deck. Contractor, fir will feel good on your feet. Homeowner, okay, fir it is. Nighttime back in the mountains. Spotted owl flies ever so quietly with a mouse in her beak into waiting branches of Douglas fir, who feels her landing. After dinner, her partner spotted owl flies in on silent wings, yet calling out a sharp-edged sound, very unfamiliar to Douglas fir. Douglas fir feels uneasy. What is the story that comes with this heart-piercing sound? Spotted owl speaks. They're called plantations. The two-leggeds call them plantations. They plant your seeds and your little ones grow, except they're really not allowed to grow much because they're only growing them to kill them. They grow them just to disappear them, cut down with sharp teeth and put in hot ovens until all the life is cooked out of them, and then piled on trucks and taken who knows where, far away from kin and mountain, far, far away, with no needles or cones or little ones ever again. Plantations, they're called plantations. Spotted owl's story shudders through this 1,000-acre old, old stand of Douglas fir kin. Old Douglas fir tree feels tears of resins in the cracks of his beautiful bark skin. How can this be? What can we do? And red vole feels the old one's shudder of grief all the way up to his home in the topmost branches. 15 years later, back in the city neighborhood, another conversation. Homeowner, the wood in my deck is old and splintery, falling apart. Can you remove it and put on new wood? Contractor, yes, I can do that. What kind of wood do you want? Homeowner, I don't know anything about wood. What do you think? I seem to remember the word fir from back when the deck was made. Maybe fir would be good. It's a pretty red color and nice on my feet. Contractor, I'll look into it, but I don't have a truck to haul the old wood away. Can you arrange to dispose of it? I could bring some big, heavy plastic bags to put it in. Homeowner, I guess I can figure it out. On the same day, a gathering in the mountains. Douglas fir saw the two-legged slowly approaching, walking up the mountainside, greeting his kin with songs and laughter. He remembered them. They were the healing ones that made medicine from his needles and bark and from his resin. They stood at his roots, so glad to see him, gazing up as high as their eyes could reach, taking in his old, old tallness and his old, old wideness. They called him Tree of Many Rings, remarking of his beauty and strength and the homes of many beings in his being. They took in his breath and gave theirs back again for him. They spoke of healing stories from his medicine and offered him much gratitude as they left small, beautiful stones at his feet. As they placed their hands on his bark skin, they felt Douglas fir's tears of resin, and they knew it was time to listen. As spotted owls peeked out from their tree hollow and voles stopped running around the treetop, Douglas fir told the plantation story. As his resin tears flowed, the two-legged medicine's one's tears flowed, and as he shuddered for all his kin, the two-legged medicine ones shuddered for his kin, who was their kin as well, in the big way that we are all kin. Douglas fir asked the two-leggeds to tell this story to all who would listen, truly listen. He offered his resin tears for their medicine bags so that those who couldn't listen to the story might open their ears and their hearts. And they promised to carry the plantation story with them. That night in Massachusetts, the homeowner couldn't sleep because she kept trying to come up with a plan to get rid of the old wood, put it in trash bags and sneak it into dumpsters at nighttime around the neighborhood, hire someone to come with a truck and take away all the plastic bags full of wood, leave it on the curbside in a plastic bag for the city dump truck to pick up one bag every week so they wouldn't notice or complain. What a problem to get rid of that wood. How do you get rid of so much wood? There's the wood on the deck and the wood on the stairs, going from the second floor to the driveway. I just can't figure out how to do this. Who knew old wood would be such a problem? And in the northern Cascade Mountains, the two-leggeds built a fire and invited their village of kin to sit around the fire. The two-legged medicine ones told Douglas fir's plantation story, true to their promise. As they told it, they danced it, and as they danced it, they sang it, and the two-leggeds of the village cried together and shuddered together, sending the plantation story out in the smoke of the fire to reach wherever it could reach, so as many hearts as possible could carry the plantation story far and wide. The next morning, back in the East Coast, in the city neighborhood, almost before sunrise, the homeowner suddenly woke up with a knowing and remembering, taking her completely by surprise. She saw her own disrespect of fir, her disregard for the sacred life and the story of fir, her own ignorance about who fir was, where fir was from, how fir came to be on her deck, even fir's complete name, her using of fir without thought, permission, gratitude, or honoring, her thinking of fir as trash, not as a being, as a problem, not as a gift. She was appalled and shocked at the blatant boldness and extent of her colonized thinking, her attitude, and her behavior. I want, I can have, I'm done, get rid of it, I want a new one, I can pay for it, so I can have it again. And so with deep regret, she began to a serious do-over. She researched returning fir to its forest origins and discovered that fir was Douglas fir, growing in the Northwest, 3,000 miles away, probably too far to drive with a car full of Douglas fir. So she decided to make her reparations on the East Coast as best she could. She used the plastic bags for stacking Douglas fir in her tiny city driveway and keeping the boards of his body dry, thanking Douglas fir for beautiful color, soft feeling under her feet, toughness in lasting for so long, wonderful grain, and for his life. She brought Douglas fir's story to council and to a healer's retreat and to Women Explore, and carried boards of Douglas fir to friends who gratefully received them to make beautiful garden beds and swampy walkways. She dried boards in the sun so the Douglas fir could transform in warming fires and sacred fires. And she carried boards to the woods near her home so the Douglas fir could be in the story of decomposing and becoming earth once again. In a public lecture, she shared her own internalized patriarchal thinking, attitude, and behavior as she discovered it in her relationship with Douglas fir. She shared it with humiliation and honest shame. And then she gave enough money to plant 144 new forest trees. And so when Douglas fir arrived again at her home, she received and honored Douglas fir with a rebirth knowing, the knowing and remembering that came on the smoke that night. Postscript. I write this story on paper made from trees, my bare feet on Douglas fir's body. Douglas fir has been with me since Christmas trees of my childhood, and I did not know. And still, even as I learned to come more present, to begin to remember and to honor our kinship, I don't yet know how I and we can live in full reciprocity with the giving of a beloved being's life. So that is Bark Skin Tears. Luis is my best fan. It's my hope that the story gets carried in whatever way it gets carried so that it can be a bigger story. It can be a spiritual story, an older story, an ancient story. It can become a ritual. It can help with climate crisis, however it's taken. I was in a spiritual circle with a woman who was speaking. She's from the Northwest, and she has created a nursery for young Douglas firs in her backyard so that they can grow safely and then be replanted. So I said to her, I have a story I'm going to send you. And I sent it to her, and she thanked me, and she said, thank you. This is the story we need to listen to, and can I give it to all the other people who have Douglas fir nurseries in their backyards? And I said, sure, share it with them. And if there's a story that comes back, let me know. So that is my talk, and was longer than I meant it to be, but there we are. So any responses would be welcome.
Linda, I have a response. I'll start off. It was wonderful and just very, very touching and moving. My question is, I'm curious as to how or why you made Douglas fir male. Huh. You referred to he.
Yeah, I noticed that. I didn't say he until the last page.
Uh-huh.
I noticed that I said he twice.
Why did that happen?
I think that it's really hard work to not assign gender. And, you know, and I maybe just ran out of a little steam, but I made a mental note to myself when I read the two he's that I need to do something about that because that wasn't my intention. But it's the easier route. That's why we do a lot of things that we do in terms of assigning labels and names and titles. It's the easier route.
Many times as when people speak of, you know, a bird, the bird, it's assigned masculine. Mm-hmm. And again, it's just a habit and probably left over from when, you know,
right,
the masculine was the primary, you know, bird watchers and bird chroniclers, yes, researchers and so forth.
Yeah, that's what stuck in the end, for sure.
You really, I mean, I have to really make a conscious effort not to do that.
Yeah.
Because it's just prolific all over the birding community.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez. Paula. Muted.
I was very touched with the way you brought me along the process, and you switched back and forth between Douglas fir, and I was very just moved by Douglas fir and kin in the forest. And very early I had in your talk, I had that picture. And as we moved along, the problem that you had that you brought out about how to discard and then the evolution that you had is, it's the lesson for right now, in my opinion, because, I'll speak personally, I have a lot of problem with people doing renovations, which of course were done a lot in the pandemic, and just ripping out perfectly good wood things, wood steps, whatever, because whatever, but they're not broken down. Okay. So this evolution that you bring up, I mean, it speaks to our larger issue in this culture of how much wood and other things end up in landfill that are perfectly good and without the acknowledgement. So I just was very moved by how then you went into the realm of gratefulness.
Yeah. And Paula, it's some of this, just like I just said with Mary Margaret, is about time. The amount of time it takes to put all that wood in plastic bags and have it picked up versus all the other things that I ended up doing is a huge difference. And it's also about ignorance. I didn't even know what a Douglas fir was. I didn't know those were the Christmas trees. And so I spent a lot of time doing research. So the vole and the owl and everything that's described there and the plantations are all true stories. None of that is
right.
Created by me, and the ways that those parts of the Douglas fir were used as healing. That's all from research. And so to invite the story, I do that research if I have a particular topic like I did this time, Douglas fir.
Well, that really came through in this, that was true nonfiction. And then the way you kept engaging me, the listener, or me, the reader, I completely understood that it was, the medicine man part, the two-legged medicine man, medicine people part. And I appreciate the way you wove actual facts in with how you told the story. It's very powerful. And I, for our time in the climate now, it's amazing. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Mary Rose?
First, can you tell us Cheryl's last name?
Potts, P-O-T-T-S.
Okay. And you just reminded me, talking about Christmas trees, that we have a friend who came here from Switzerland when he was very young, and they never, he was just shocked at how Americans bought Christmas trees and then threw them away. And he said, first of all, in a small country like Switzerland, which I'm sure has lots of trees, but he said, you wouldn't dream of cutting down a tree, putting it in your house, and then throwing it away. Wow. So one year we lived near them in Maynard, and they had a real tree with the root ball, and they put real candles on the tree and stood there with the fire extinguisher watching the candles, and then, they weren't lit for very long. And then they planted the tree on their front lawn. Just amazing. And I wondered what you thought about Christmas trees, and do you buy one and whatever?
Well, no, we haven't bought one for years and years. But I have to tell you that after writing this story, I live near Allendale Farm, and they sell
Christmas
trees. And I had this experience of going there last year when they were back open again. And it was the moment the trees had arrived, and they were all lined up, wrapped up, and they had all their cut trunks facing this way, and each one had a different color painted on it, labeling its value. And I actually felt sick to my stomach. I just, there was something about all of them wrapped in nets, all of them lined up, all of them painted worth their value. And it felt like genocide.
Dead bodies.
I was sick to my stomach, and I didn't expect that reaction, and I didn't know I was showing up in that particular day, but I know I had a different reaction than I would have a few years ago. And you know, again, it's not, to me, it's not about right and wrong. It's about consciousness. Just having no idea what I was doing. Then we can't even give gratitude for what we take or what we ask for. And we don't even know the story of the being. Like, what would we feel about cutting a Christmas tree if we knew the story of Douglas Fir? And we knew, and it somehow reminds me of the Indian schools, the children taken from their families, put into schools. And it's not exactly a plantation, but it's really saying, we're taking you and we're not recognizing your few humanity. We're making you useful to us. The language we want you to have, the religion we want you to have, we're shaping you and using you as we want, no matter your story. So I don't know. It just raises for me consciousness about a lot of those things. Marianne.
Thank you for the story. It brings up a lot of thoughts for me. One of them is that I'm now, because of Mary Rose's suggestion, reading Braiding's Sweetgrass. And so there's so many comparable ideas and themes in that, and beginning with being grateful and giving thanks, and then using wisely and not throwing out. But another thought I had was, you also mentioned at one point colonialism, and given what we were talking about before, it's such a parallel to taking, exploiting, using up, and then moving on. And, you know, and that's happening today in the world in different, you know, with all these precious metals that we need for our electronic world. And then the other thing about, got me thinking now about Christmas trees, because I love a real tree, and yet, and I always thought I was doing a good thing not buying one of those plastic things. Now I have to figure out a different approach. Anyway, thank you.
Thanks for all your listening. Barbara?
I'm hoping the echo is gone. Is it there?
It's good.
Okay. I just connected something. Wonderful story, Linda. And separate from here, I'd like to talk to you about some kind of publishing to get it into schools where teachers and students can talk about it. I think it's that good, and I think it's perhaps doable if we can, if that's anything you want to do. I'd like to have a conversation separate.
Always open to conversation.
But separate from that, so when you said all of a sudden these things came to you out of the blue, so Peg at Mind Body talks about two different pathways into the brain. She talks about one being cognitive, analytical, and the other being going back to when we were primal and had to deal with the environment and more instinctive. I happen to go on to something that's called Technology Networks, trying to find their version. They separate it as a ventricle system associated with functions assigning meaning and motivation, and the dorsal system related to space, time, and movement. But when I was reading the Huddleston book, Preparing for Surgery, it talks about going off and talking to the part that's going to be operated on and letting it talk to you and tell you what it needs. And I'm reading this thinking, excuse me? And I'm like, I have no idea how to do this, but I thought about it and I went off, and out of the blue, I'm thinking, of course it makes sense that it is my back that's in trouble, because that's support to your body. And at heart, in my life, I am not particularly well supported. And then it went from there, and it came out of nowhere.
You're such an adventurer, Barbara. What happened?
I think that's exactly the same pathway that you were talking about in terms of how you opened it up and became receptive. And this is another pathway to really understanding the world and learning. And, you know, if you had told me this was going to happen, I would have said not in a million years. But it did.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't have any idea where these stories come from. But they come from some kind of knowing somewhere, some connection. Yeah.
Well, think about it. You know, before we came these thinking beings, we had to survive. The survival depended on developing some very natural tendencies for whatever came at us.
Yes.
And I think that is where it's coming from. And then we evolved, for better or worse, I'm not quite sure, into using other areas to get through life. You will.
Yeah.
But the story was just wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. Susan?
Yeah, that was a wonderful story, Lindsay. I wanted to ask you what you learned from the other people in your group. I mean, you've been meeting with these people and listening to their stories and talking together about writing your stories. I just wondered if you could share what you've learned from them.
I keep learning from them, because where stories come from, because everyone, and each time we meet, someone gets a story from a surprising place. They could be walking out in nature and something tells them to stop and look, and it makes no sense to them, but they stop and look, and then they get ready to move on. No, stop and stay longer. And a story is unfolding that they don't even know has started yet. And so I've learned a lot from all the ways that a story can come through. And that just tells me there may be even more of them. And I also have learned that there's something magical about stories. So Cheryl will say, okay, this week, go write a story about a mountain with a hole in it. And we all go off and we don't communicate. Some of us are friends with each other, but we don't talk about the stories in between. And we come back, and there's a way that the stories often have a weaving connection to them that we didn't know. And so it's like trusting magic in a way, which is in your title next week, right? Looking for magic. But it's like trusting magic in some way that they'll come. And be connected, and how did they get connected? And just learning to trust that and not even ask why. Why is that happening? Well, it just is. And it happened week after week, and we all keep showing up. And I've also learned that the way that they listen to my stories and I listen to their stories makes all the difference. We meet for 2 hours, and there are 4 stories. So there's lots of space for the stories to breathe and the stories to be told and to be listened to and shared. That's some of what comes to me as you ask the question.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm gonna step in and.
Can Luis just say one thing then before you step
sure.
in? I didn't see you.
I not only love this story, but I love all the other stories that I make a lot of learning there. But what I wanted to say is that if you look into every spiritual practice of where any religion or no religion, the way to communicate the message is through stories. That in any spiritual practice, there are stories that tell the message. So that's what I love the most about it, is that to me, each of these stories belong to a set of spiritual behaving and belonging. And I'm just touch all the time. I mean, it's looking to any religion, and you recite stories. That's what it is, spiritual. Thank you.
Yeah, there's an indigenous elder that tells a story about if you want. Stories are like fireflies. They're all around you all the time. And sometimes they light up and sometimes they don't. When they light up, you know, get hold of it and let it come through you. So thank good. You.
Thank you so much. What a wonderful start to the series. And Susan's idea, I think, of having a story each time from one of us. So that's a wonderful reinforcement and encouragement for everybody to think of one and offer to do one and see how powerful it an experience it is for all of us. What a gift. Thank you.